Bidding for your jobs, a few words from a nurse involved in the Georgia hospital shootings, a look at hands-only CPR, and congestive heart failure. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day, and welcome to this episode of The Nursing Show, episode 18 to be exact. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. If you are a brand new subscriber to The Nursing Show and want to check out and find out a little bit more about everything going on here, I urge you to head over to nursingshow.com. Easy enough, isn't it? And check out all of the links and information available over there. In the category for the podcast, you will find all of the show notes, including links to everything I talk about in this and every other episode of The Nursing Show, so you can follow up and get the best information available for you. Remember, I provide information here for general informational purposes only. It's up to you to go out and follow up on that information using the links that I provide, as well as your own agency or facilities, protocols, and procedures guides. Well, first of all, I want to thank listener Paula for an email, a couple of emails that we exchanged actually, talking about congestive heart failure. She has experience in the home healthcare field, and it's a topic that she has had to educate patients on many times. And she was hoping that there might be a need for a review here on The Nursing Show, an opportunity to talk a little bit about congestive heart failure, its different presentations, and some of the information that we can make available for patient education and for our own education and review. So we'll be following up on that a little bit later. All right, time for the news. My first item that I'm going to take a look at in this week's news has to do with a brand new website that popped up on my radar, and it showed up in the Medical News Today news section on nursing. And it's a site called nurseauction.com. Now, this is an advertisement for them, but I do find the concept interesting enough that their press release caught my eye. In a time when nurses are in high demand, a supply and demand auction style service for nurse staffing might actually be something that would be, interesting to nurses out there. The site nurseauction.com is attempting to alleviate that nursing shortage and staffing issues by applying the law of supply and demand. What they're going to be doing is setting up a situation where nurses can basically auction off their services. It's what the founder of the site is calling a win-win situation for both nurses and employers across the country. Nurses can apply and fill in their information, setting minimum bids for their services, selecting the shifts they prefer to work, and then employers can come over and fill in the gaps in their nursing rotations with qualified and eager nurses in their region. So basically what happens is there's a live auction that goes on. Nurses actually open personal bids based on available dates, and they then can request bids from employers starting at a certain minimum rate. So if those employers are short-staffed, they can head over and find a rate that they're hoping to use or pay, or willing to pay anyway, and they can go ahead and follow up. There will be a rating system that will be ranking nurses based on their professionalism and reliability, and the nurse profiles will be used to track their time of logging in, how recently they've put up information for their bids, and hopefully we'll track this system adequately for both the nurses that are applying for positions and the facilities that are looking to fill them. So check it out for yourself. I don't endorse this in any way, shape, or form, but certainly their press release caught my eye as an interesting twist on nurse staffing. I'm sure many of you were thinking about nurse staffing when you thought about the shootings in Georgia last week when a gentleman returned to the hospital where his mother had died years before and shot three staff members at that facility, claiming that he was responding to the fact that his mother had not been adequately cared for. There's no evidence of any wrongdoing in his mother's death, that she died of completely natural causes. And yet this distraught gentleman came to the facility and vented his mistaken frustrations on the nurses and other staff members in that facility. So I have to wonder, you know, it's something, as a person who has been a paramedic in the field for a long time, something we harp on all the time is scene safety, because we go to so many situations where tensions are running high, assaults and things like that. And we constantly talk about having that situational awareness, being aware of what's going on around you, kind of developing that third eye in the back of your head and being in a position where you always know where your exits are. This isn't something that you really need to worry about in the hospital, or at least didn't think you needed to worry about. So I found an article that follows up on this a little bit, talking about how well the facility and the staff responded to the situation when that hospital was locked down during the shootings. The article linked to in the show notes is a brief discussion with a nurse by the name of Maria that worked in that facility. And when the hospital locked down, she discussed in a few brief statements what kind of things went on during that lockdown period when patients and staff members together were at risk. And, you know, she talked about a few different things I'd like to kind of draw attention to. First of all, she made a comment about banding together and learning from other situations, learning from things that have happened in the past, things that happened at Virginia Tech, for instance. And this is an important statement because it's something I think that everybody can think about. We don't want to be doom and gloom, and we don't certainly want to live in fear all the time when we're at our workplace. But it doesn't mean that you can't take a moment and plan. We talk about planning all the time, thinking ahead and planning, developing a plan. Well, you know, if your facility doesn't already have a plan for something like this, now's the time to do that. The other thing is, do you have a plan when something like this happens? If your facility doesn't actively have a plan, or if you haven't thought about how you would react to your facility's plan, you need to think ahead and think about those kind of things. What would you do? Maria had a few comments about what they did and some of the things they did well. We locked patients in closets. We put them underneath their beds. It all happened so fast. We learned from 9/11. We learned from Virginia Tech. These patients knew not to come out. We band together and we worked together. And although there were three lives lost that should have been, we're going to put one foot in front of the other. So I think this is a good statement and a good learning point for everybody to remember that you need to plan ahead for the unfortunate events that might never occur, but if they do, you want to be at least partially prepared for them. I have a good friend of mine who does a show on disaster management and disaster planning, and Rick Rosati over at the Mitigation Journal podcast at mitigationjournal.com talks all of the time about a phrase he coined called the rule of outcomes. The rule of outcomes basically says you take what you already know about basic things like assessment, about planning, about evaluation, and you apply those concepts to things that may happen. You can do things like assess and diagnose, plan, implement, and evaluate. You can do that ADP planning by going and doing the same things in an emergency situation. You can assess the situation, diagnose what's going on, plan a solution to protect yourself and your patients, implement that plan, and then evaluate if it indeed is being effective. Those are things you can do, and that is how you apply something like the rule of outcomes. So I just wanted to bring this to your attention. I think it's something we all need to be prepared for, as sad and upsetting as that might be, because this could happen in anybody's facility. Finally, I wanted to touch a little bit on a recent story on the hands-only CPR guidelines that have come out recently from the American Heart Association. There's a link in the show notes to the circulation, the newsletter that is put out by the American Heart Association, and I urge you to download that. The science behind all of the new guidelines and new information is all presented there. They've really done a good job of making sure that we understand the studies that they've used to arrive at the current findings. But one of the things that they want to do is increase the number of people that are willing to do bystander CPR in sudden cardiac arrest. So they decided that people were unwilling to do any CPR if they had to do rescue breathing. And so they decided to implement and look at doing compression-only CPR in place of no CPR. And so basically, the new guidelines are saying for sudden cardiac arrest, witnessed collapses in the field, that bystanders are encouraged to do compression-only CPR if they're not willing to provide ventilations. This does not apply to pediatric patients or infants. It does not apply to unwitnessed arrests. It only applies to witnessed collapses and sudden onset cardiac arrest witnessed by bystanders, healthcare providers, and people that are children or unwitnessed cardiac arrests are still to be provided regular CPR with ventilations. So check out the issue of circulation yourself. I have a link in the show notes. You can go download the PDF and check that out so that you have the information and the science behind this shocking new update to the CPR rules. I'm sure you'll be asked a lot of questions about it by everybody that you know, because of course, you're in healthcare, you must know all about it. Now you do. Right, it's time to move on into this week's tip of the week, and I want to again thank listener Paula, who got in touch with me here at the show at comments@nursingshow.com. She called, checked in by email, I guess, not called in, but checked in, and she wanted me to go over a little bit about congestive heart failure. She has a background in home healthcare. And even though she's not in that field anymore, she believes it's something that I needed to touch on and also provide you some information and resources you can use to provide educational materials for your patients. So we're going to go ahead and look at congestive heart failure. We're going to do a quick review of the anatomy and the causes of heart failure, and then we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the resources that you can use to educate patients in the field and in your offices. So what are we talking about when we talk about congestive heart failure? You might hear it mentioned called just heart failure, congestive heart failure. It doesn't matter what you call it. It is a life-threatening condition. And basically, it means the heart is no longer able to pump blood against the resistance on the other end of its exit. And I say the other end of its exit because it depends on if it's the left side or the right side of the heart. The left side of the heart is pumping against peripheral vascular resistance, that resistance at basically the capillary beds, that when there's constriction at the far end, when there's atherosclerosis at the far end, anything that's causing the arteries to be less flexible or less open to blood flow is going to be causing peripheral resistance, and that resistance causes more problems for the heart to pump against. And over time, if especially in the case of damaged heart muscle, it can be difficult for the heart to pump against that resistance. On the right side of the heart, there may be systemic resistance in the pulmonary system. There may be ongoing problems like COPD that have caused damage to the tissue in the lungs and caused a hardening of the alveoli. You know, you get that atelectasis, you know, the alveoli are collapsing because they have become dried out from years of abuse from things like smoking. They get emphysema, they develop chronic bronchitis, and they develop increased pulmonary pressures that cause issues in air exchange, gas exchange, and also cause damage to the pulmonary capillaries. And this damage to the pulmonary capillaries causes hypertension to the right side of the heart and causes a backup of fluid there. So what are we looking at? We're looking at the blood backing up because it can't get pushed out of the heart well enough. So how do you know which side covers which? Well, think left lungs. Okay, if the left side of the heart cannot effectively push that blood back out into the rest of the body for whatever reason, because the pump itself is damaged, because there's too much resistance at the other end, then that fluid is going to back up into the lungs. And you'll have the plasma leaking into the alveoli. You'll have fluid backing up. The patient will develop crackles, will develop rales, bronchi. Fluid will eventually fill up in the lungs, and you may actually see pink frothy sputum coming out of the patient's mouth. A seriously bad sign and evidence that this has gone really very far and the patient is in imminent danger of collapse, circulatory and respiratory collapse from this problem. On the right side of the heart, we have a similar problem, but the fluid's going to be pushed in a different direction. Think about the lungs as having hypertensive situation in cases of patients with chronic COPD issues. Patients that have had a right-sided MI are also likely to experience problems with right-sided heart failure. And in this case, the fluid would be pushed back into the body. It would not be able to be pushed back out of the right side of the lung of the heart and would be kept in the system. And so you'd see venous pooling. You'd see signs of fluid being pushed into the tissues, into the interstitial space. And you'll see edema, usually in the location that gravity draws it. In other words, the legs, the ankles, the feet, moving on up the body through the legs and into the abdomen. You may see ascites, that buildup of fluid in the abdominal space, as well as just general swelling and edema across the whole body. In extremely strong issues, you may actually see the problem show up as jugular venous distension, as the right side of the heart really is having issues and the fluid's actually backing up and causing jugular veins to be distended in the neck. So you need to really do a careful assessment. And it's important to check your chart and get a sense of where the patient may have had a problem. If they're a COPD patient, you're thinking that they may have an enlarged right side of the heart and be experiencing right-sided heart failure. If they've had an MI, figure out where that MI was. If it's a left-sided MI or an inferior MI, you may be looking at the left side of the heart. Sometimes septal wall, as well as posterior or right-sided MI, all can be signs of right-sided heart failure. So these are just some things you need to be aware of so that you can adequately be prepared to treat the patient and help prepare the patient for signs and symptoms they need to be aware of. A lot of the times, treatment for a congestive heart failure patient includes treating symptoms and signs that they may be encountering. A lot of these patients are going to be on diuretics like Lasix. They may be on hydrochlorothiazide. They may also be prescribed nitroglycerin for signs of angina. And it's important to remember that patients with right-sided heart failure are at increased risk for bottoming out their pressure. So you really want to monitor these patients carefully, especially if they're receiving nitrates or morphine or some other vasodilator, because these patients are at an increased risk for having their pressures really bottom out quickly. Remember, you're going to cause venous dilation in patients that really are relying very heavily on that preload from the venous system to help fill the right side of the heart and help push fluid through. And if you take away that preload, you could be causing making a bad problem even worse because their right side is not effectively pumping to begin with. So just keep that in mind as well. As far as patient education goes, there's a couple of very good resources out there. Among them are the National Institutes of Health Medline Encyclopedia Service that's available at the National Institutes of Health website. Basically, if you go to a search engine like Google and you search any medical term or medication or test and put the letters NIH and the word Medline, M-E-D-L-I-N-E, afterwards, usually one of the first 10 results that you come across will be a page at this site. And it's a great resource for you to bookmark and hang on to. There's a link to the page for congestive heart failure in the show notes. There's also links from that page to other sites that are considered authoritative, including the offshoot of the NIH, the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute page. And they have a great tutorial. So if you have a patient that has internet access, or if you have internet access at your facility, you can actually provide them the link to this tutorial, and they can actually learn with a great animated tutorial all about heart failure and learn a little bit about their own care in regards to this problem. So I urge you to head over to the website, nursingshow.com, check in the show notes for this particular episode, and you'll find links to everything I've talked about here. I know I've gone a little longer than normal with the tip this week, but I wanted to make sure I covered everything. And Paula, thanks for your tip and question on what we could cover this week in the show. That's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. As always, I want to thank everybody for checking out the show and urge you to head over to nursingshow.com and check out the links in the show notes, as well as information on helping out to support the show by supporting our advertisers and also taking advantage of the special savings I've arranged for you, the listeners of this show. If you have any questions, any comments, and of course, any corrections, you want to make sure you get them into me here at comments@nursingshow.com. I want to make sure that this is a community effort here and that I provide the best possible information to all of you out there. All right, I'm going to wrap up with some great PodSafe music. I'm going to do another song this week by the artist Caitlin Smith. This week, the song Breathe Deep. Check it out, and if you like what you hear, you can find her link in the show notes. Let her know you heard her song here on The Nursing Show. Okay, that's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back real soon with another episode, and until then, I want to remind all of you to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.